to describe a strange and wonderful scene of a lion chasing a donkey. Whenever you see documentaries about animals and how, you know, when you see the scene of a lion or a cheetah chasing its prey,
yes,
okay, it's very like it catches your attention and you keep watching it and it's like it's
rare actually.
It's interesting, yeah. It's rare and it's like, and Allah uses the word qaswara. And by the way, these two words rhyme. كأنهم حمر مستنفرة فرت من قسورة. It's as if the lion is chasing the donkey, because both words, they have the same rhyme. They, mm-hmm. It's like they're coming right after one another.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, we'll be right back after a short break. Stay tuned. Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, in the second segment of the program, let's recite the Quran. We all are going to listen to the recitation of verses 1 to 7 of Surah Al-Infitar, recited by Sheikh Abdul Mun'im Tuqi. Dear audience, let's enjoy it.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الكريم الذي خلقك فسواك فعدلك فسواك فعدلك فعدلك في أي صورة ما شاء ركبك صدق الله العظيم.
Dear brothers and sisters in Islam, You're still listening to the program Let's Recite the Quran, and what you just listened to was recitation of verses 1 to 8 of Suratul Infitar, recited by Sheikh Abdul Munaim At-Tuhi. Now, Brother Muhammad, let's talk about this beautiful recitation.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This was a very enjoyable recitation to listen to.
Surely it was.
And the thing is that the Egyptian reciters, they know exactly how to recite the words of the Quran in such a way that it conveys the meaning perfectly. And the maqamat that they choose, the intonation, the tone, the pitch, everything. For example, verse 6, the way that Sheikh At-Tuhi, he read, yeah, like he, the ya ayyuhal insan, Allah is trying to say, oh, you human being. Ya is a word that is used to catch attention, yes, to draw attention. The way that he says ya, he plays with the maqam. Ya, like he wants to catch the attention of the human, yes, being. Ya ayyuhal insan. Ya ayyuhal insanu ma gharraka bi rabbikal kareem. And on the word Kareem, he has a rising intonation because it's a question. Ma gharraka bi rabbikal kareem. What has made you arrogant, or what has seduced thee from thy Lord? This is what Yusuf Ali has said.
But the Lord, who is Kareem, actually.
Yeah, the most beneficent, the majestic. What has made you arrogant, proud, that you don't listen to your Lord? Alladhi khalaqaka fasawaka fa'adalak. When he repeats the verse, Ya ayyuhal insan, Almat nafsum ma qaddamat wa akharat, Ya ayyuhal insan ma gharraka bi rabbikal kareem. The way that he reads the word Kareem is like you could feel this majesty,
yeah,
of Allah.
The Rahmah,
everything. Karama, yeah. The way that he pronounces it, he pronounces it very beautifully.
Yes.
You know? Bi Rabbika al-Kareem, like this. Kareem, just the Kareem, just the Ya'ul Mat of the Kareem, he changes his voice. He makes his voice very gentle,
yes,
and very delicate.
And it is effective.
Yeah. And one thing about this surah is that we have a lot of ta sakinas. We're going to talk about the tajweed now.
Good idea.
The ta sakinas have to be pronounced correctly and audibly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if you can't hear the ta sakina, it means that you are not pronouncing the ta correctly. For example, if you say إِذَا السَّمَاءُ فَطَرَتْ وَإِذَا الْكَوَاكِبُ تَثَرَتْ. Did you hear the ta?
No.
إِذَا السَّمَاءُ فَطَرَتْ وَإِذَا الْكَوَاكِبُ تَثَرَتْ.
Pronouncing it without qalqala,
without
is
qalqala,
difficult.
Yeah, and without aspiration. If you say وَإِذَا الْكَوَاكِبُ تَثَرَتْ, that's incorrect.
Yeah.
This is what makes it difficult. And of course, sometimes the microphone can't detect this very subtle sound. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
But whenever he recites in the low register, we could hear the taz very clearly. Because whenever he stops on the last, the final word of the verse. For example, he says, عَلِمَتْ نَفْسٌ مَا قَدَّمَتْ وَأَخَّرَتْ وَأَخَّرَتْ.
We hear it is full of sound.
Yeah.
Ta sound.
We have a lot of ta sounds at the beginning of this surah. And then from verse 6 onwards, we don't have the ta sakina. Kareem alladhi khalqaka fasawaka fa'adalaka fi ayyi suratin ma sha'a rakkabak. And khalqaka fasawaka fa'adalak.
And then maybe the kaf is repeated now.
Yeah, the kaf is repeated. خَلَقَكَ فَسَوَّاكَ فَعَدَلَكَ. The خَلَقَكَ.
خَلَقَكَ.
We have a خَا and a قَاف. Both are letters of إِسْتِعْلَى. They have to be pronounced with تَفْخِيم.
And لَام in between.
The لَام should not be pronounced with تَفْخِيم. So we use the shape of the lips to help us pronounce these two letters of تَفْخِيم correctly. خَا, the mouth opens vertically.
Mm-hmm.
La, the mouth opens horizontally.
Yes.
And qa, again, the mouth opens vertically.
Vertically.
Khalaqaka.
Khalaqaka.
Yes. And Sheikh Atoukhi, he read the Maddul Munfasils with four vowel counts. Ya ayyuhal insanu ma gharraka bi rabbikal kareem alladhi khalaqaka fasawwaka fa'adalaka fi ayy surah fi ayy. We have Maddul Munfasil. Maddul Munfasil is disjunct mad. It takes place whenever there is a long vowel followed by a hamza, with the hamza being in another word.
Yes.
If the hamza is in the same word,
we have maddul
muttasil, the conjunct mad. If it's if the long vowel and the hamza are in two different words, we would have maddul munfasil. Fi ayy surah, the sad of surah has tafkhim
at a moderate level.
You have to make sure that it's pronounced like a sad and not a seen. If you say fi ayy surah, surah, it's not a sad. Surah, surah,
surah,
surah, surah.
The root of the tongue should be raised.
Yeah, the root of the tongue is raised.
And it's important to know that the place of articulation of seen
and
sad
is the same. So if you say fi ayy surah,
again, it is wrong.
Surah is incorrect. Some people think that you have to make a whistling sound when pronouncing sad. That's not true.
Mm-hmm.
Sad is just like seen, except it has tafkhim.
That is the raised root of the tongue.
And yes, the root of it. And also has itbaq, which is the back of the tongue is raised as well. It's both pharyngealized and velarized.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad, and thank you, dear audience of IRIB English Radio. That was the final part of the program. Let's recite the Quran. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. And don't forget to visit our website, that is parstoday.com. Please click on the tab Call of Islam, and there you can listen to this program as well as other programs of this radio. Until next time, we'll leave you in Allah's care. Have a nice time and goodbye. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياة به. هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان هو القرآن ضياء يملأ الآفاق ونور يبعث الأشواق وفيه محاسن الأخلاق
diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Welcome to all our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran, and I am Asma, your host for the next hour. Hope you will accompany us into these early hours of this morning. We start this hour's lineup with Q&A on Islamic beliefs. The program provides answers to listeners' questions about Islamic beliefs. The Ocean of Da'a will follow, which gives an explanation of supplications taken from various books such as Mafatih al-Junan and Kamil al-Ziyarat. Our varied radio productions feature will follow at 1:30 a.m. And our final program this hour is Spring of Truth. The program provides English translations of a selection of statements and speeches by the founding father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Answering your doubts and questions. And questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Allah, who is Ar-Rahman? Allah, who is Al-Mannan?
La ilaha illallah.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. You might find it Q&A on Islamic Beliefs in our website, iranradio.ir. I am Atal, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have Sheikh Karimi to answer today's questions. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh. Welcome to the show.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Karimi. We know that wishing for death or expecting death to come is a reprehensible or makruh act in Islam. From the other side, we might have some narrations talking about, for instance, why my death isn't coming, or for example, Lady Fatima al-Zahra, peace be upon her, did so. I'm not sure about it, okay? And I know that death might be a different concept in the eyes of an ordinary man or woman like us, and a holy lady, like Lady Fatima al-Zahra, okay?
Yeah.
So first of all, talk a little bit about the authenticity of this news. Really, did Lady Fatima al-Zahra ask for death, we can't say, to come to her, or the story was something different?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. This is a famous story among the people, among the Shia, that Lady Zahra, salamullahi alayha, she wished for death. Referring to the books of narrations, as far as I have checked, there are two instances in which our books of narrations and history, they refer to this point, but we need to analyze these two cases to see if really Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha wished for death,
mm-hmm.
and if even she wished for this, she wished for death, what does it mean?
Yes.
There are two cases. One of them is mentioned in the famous Khutbah Fadakiyya,
mm-hmm.
the sermon that Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha delivered in Medina. And this is a very great sermon of Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, full of, points regarding Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, regarding her father, Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family, regarding Imamate, and also her ride to Fadak. And alhamdulillah, it's been translated into English language. Our dear listeners, if they are interested, they can find it online. So in one part, Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha, she says the following. So this is a famous khutbah sermon of Lady Zahra salamullahi alayha mentioned in different books. For example, people, our dear listeners, can refer to Al-Ihtijaj, Ala Ahl al-Lajaj,
mm-hmm.
by the late Shia scholar Tabrizi, volume 1, page 107, this part that I'm quoting. She says, "Laytani mittu qabla hani'ati." Now, the literal translation of this sentence, so Lady Zahra Salamuna Alayha talks about all the afflictions that befell her and all the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam. And after mentioning that, she says, "Laytani mittu qabla hani'ati." I wish I had died, at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
So many people have understood this, that Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha is now wishing for death in the real sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that this sentence, laytani mittu qabla hada, I wish I had died before this, it can be a metaphor in Arabic language.
Right.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when you are suffering from too many afflictions, we know that all the afflictions that befell the Ahlul Bayt, first of all, it began with the demise of the Prophet himself, and then the right of Imam Ali alayhi salam to caliphate is usurped, the land of Fadak is usurped, and all those stories that happened to Imam Ali alayhi salam and Lady Zahra salamun alayha after the demise of the Prophet. So, having gone through all these difficulties,
yes,
when a person like Lady Zahra salamun alayha says, "Laytani mittu qabla haniyati," I wish I had died, it doesn't mean that I really wish for death today.
Mm-hmm.
No, it is, I believe, it is a kind of metaphor,
mm-hmm,
to refer to the great affliction that
and the emotional befell. Pain is over there.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I believe that, for example, you're the only daughter of, we can't say, it's better to say, that's right, the most famous daughter of, for example, Prophet Muhammad. And then at the same time, so Prophet Muhammad dies, and then all those events took place, okay? So in such an emotional pain, we can't say, you might say such a sentence.
And it doesn't mean that she's saying that out of, ordinary people,
yes,
emotion.
Or wishing for death.
Yeah, and wishing, right, for death. I mean, it's a metaphor in Arabic language.
Yes.
I mean, today, I mean, when a mother, for example, she's
too
much tired of her children,
yes,
she may say that, but she really doesn't wish for death.
Mm-hmm.
She's just referring to the trials and to the problems.
Mm-hmm.
So my point is that Lady Zahra Salman Alayha, by saying that, I mean, she's the daughter of the Prophet, as you mentioned, all the people know about his status. So when he says, "Laytani mittu qabla hada," she's referring to the greatness of the events,
mm-hmm,
okay?
Mm-hmm.
Not really she's wishing for death, na'udhu billah, for example, to die,
yeah,
at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
This is my understanding of this narration. The second case is mentioned by Allama Majlisi in Biharun Anwar, volume 43, page 177.
Yes.
In which Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha says in a supplication, "Ya Ilahi, O Allah, ajjil wafati sari'an." And this is a famous sentence mentioned by some eulogists.
That's right.
When it comes to the martyrdom days of Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha, that "ajjil wafati sari'an," O Allah, hasten my demise.
But in reality, when you look at the historical facts, it also took place. I mean, it did not take so long.
It didn't,
but the question is whether
Lady Zahra Salman Alayha wished for death or not. These are two different stories.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she was martyred when she was about 18 years. This is a famous idea. According to Ahlul Sunnah, she passed away when,
yes,
she was around 26, 27.
Yes.
The other idea among Shia scholars is about 21, 22.
Right.
These are
between
the
18
points.
To 23.
Yeah.
Right.
Between 18 and 27,
okay.
28.
This
narration,
right,
that "Ya Ilahi Hajjil Wafati Sari'an," this is a famous narration, but the point is that narrating this, Allama Majlisi himself says, "Wajadtu fi ba'd al-kutub khabaran fi wafatiham," I saw a report in some books about the demise of Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha. فَأَحْبَبْتُ إِرَادَهُ وَإِنْ لَمْ أَخُذْ مِنْ أَسْلٍ يُعَوَّلُ عَلَيْهِ. I would like to mention that narration, although I did not find it in an authentic book.
Yes.
So the narration in which the sentence "Hajjal Wafati Sari'an" is mentioned is not authentic at all. Even according to Allama Majlisi himself,
mm-hmm,
he says that I'm quoting this, but I did not find it in an authentic work,
okay,
authentic source. So my conclusion for this part of answer is that the first narration, which is mentioned in Khutbah Fadakiya, it may not mean real wish for death.
All
it
right.
might be a metaphor. The second one, the more famous one,
okay,
is not mentioned in an authentic narration.
Yes.
So we cannot say that for sure Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha had wished for
That's
a
right.
real death.
And we must know that Fadakiya's sermon was issued by Lady Zahra in a context in which she was not satisfied
yeah.
with the deviations
exactly.
that took place from the right path of Prophet Muhammad. So sometimes your wish for death might be for sacrifice for the religion of Islam too. And in terms of, we can say, complaining about the situation in which you are in.
That's a very good point. Yeah.
I mean, right after Prophet Muhammad passes away, so we could see there are so many deviations in the path of Prophet Muhammad. And Lady Zahra is an eyewitness to all of these cases, okay? See, oh, may I die and not see such a condition for the religion of Islam.
Very good point. And that is why some scholars believe that, you know, that Lady Zahra Salman Aliha did a lot to defend Wilaya and Imamate after the demise of the Prophet. She did a lot.
Okay.
From going to the houses of the Ansar and talking to the women, Khutbah Fadakiyah. And some people believe that in the continuation of her struggles, her efforts for the Wilaya, she mentioned this sentence so that people come to their conscience.
All right.
To ask themselves that why Lady Zahra Salman Aliha is saying later imitu qabla hada. So it's also a kind of continuation of her efforts.
Nothing is sweeter than the life.
Yeah.
So when you are swearing by your life and wishing for death or something like that, it means that something grave is happening to you. So it could be the demise of Prophet Muhammad, or it could be the death of your religion, Islam.
Okay.
All right.
Now, having said that, as I mentioned, in my understanding, we cannot say that for sure Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha has wished for a real death.
No.
Either it was a metaphor,
yes,
or it's not mentioned in an authentic narration. But having said that, we go back to the main question, is wishing for death makruh, reprehensible at all times? The general answer given to this question is yes, because, I mean, having a long life is one of the divine blessings. It's been mentioned that Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family went to visit a person who was sick, and that person was complaining from the pain, and he wished for death. And the Prophet told him that never wish for death, because if you're a good person, you can increase your righteous actions. And if you're a bad person, then you might have the opportunity to repent. This is mentioned in Wasa'il al-Shi'a, volume 2, page 449. But according to some, so this is the general principle that wishing for death is makruh. But we have, for example, Imam Sajjad alayhi salam in dua, supplication number 22 in Sahifa Sajjadiyya.
Yes.
When he says, فَإِذَا كَانَ عُمْرِي مَرْتَعًا لِلشَّيْطَانِ, if my life becomes a pasture for Satan, meaning that Satan is dominating over my whole life, فَقْبِضْنِي إِلَيْكَ, then seize me onto yourself, meaning that I may die.
Okay.
Before your wrath overtakes me, قَبْلَ أَنْ يَسْبِقَ مَقْتُكَ إِلَيْكَ, or before your anger prevails against me.
That's right.
So when we put all these narrations together, is that generally speaking, wishing for death is not good. But for example, in the case that we are sure that if we continue our life, we are going to be deceived by the Satan more and more, and to be away from God more and more, in this case, wishing for death is not something bad. This is one point. On the other hand, for some most virtuous people, most righteous people, who have done everything good in this life and they have no duty, responsibility left, we can consider that in that case also wishing for death is not something reprehensible.
That's right.
When the Imams of the Ahlul Bayt, when the Prophet says that do not wish for death, they are talking about ordinary people who may wish for death because of afflictions, because of pains, because of problems. But in some cases, we may talk about Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha. She has done everything to defend Imam Ali Alayhi Salam. She has done her best to guide the people, but without any benefit, no one is going to, follow the instructions of Lady Zahra Salamun Alayha.
Which are attributed to Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam on the day of Ashura, we can say, calling death to himself or or the sword surround me and kill me.
Yeah.
Okay. Death in their ideology is very much different.
Yeah. So at least one way to understand this is that for such people who have done their best in their life and their mission in this world is complete.
Okay.
And now they are wishing not for an ordinary death, for martyrdom.
Yes.
And this is another story. When it comes to martyrdom, any person can wish for martyrdom as the best way for the mind. So my point is that for people like Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha who have done everything in their life, there is no duty left, even if we understand those narrations in the real sense of the world, that they wish for real death, it might be also explained that they have done everything, there is no duty left, so they may wish for death. And as I mentioned, this is a continuation of her struggle against the deviation that happened after the demise of the Prophet. And the last point that I would like to share is that some people who mentioned this story about wishing for death as related to Lady Zahra Salamullah Alayha, they can refer to chapter Maryam, verse 23, when Lady Maryam Salamullah Alayha was suffering from the pains and the difficult time that she had. She says the following, Ya laytani mittu qabla hadha. I wish I had died before this. So there are explanations in both Shia and Sunni sources of exegesis of the Noble Book of Quran. Our dear listeners can refer to them.
Okay.
So my point is that this is also mentioned by Lady Maryam Salamullah Alayha, and I believe that in that case, the best explanation is that it is a kind of metaphor. Lady Maryam Salamullah Alayha also didn't meant this to really happen. It is a metaphor referring to the difficult time that she was passing through.
All right. It was very kind of you, Sheikh. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs with me, Atta, the host of the program, and Sheikh Karimi. For more information and also to download for free our other episodes, visit our website, iranradio.ir. Till another episode, God bless you all. Fi amanallah.
إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن كل من كان محبا لهم كل من كان محبا لهم يدخل الجنة من غير حزن يدخل الجنة من غير حزن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن علي
It's too late. If you haven't spoken up yet, it might be too late for you. This is your call to say something and not let history judge you for what you should have done.
There once was a day when we were shadows in the street, paper thin excuses crumbling at our feet. Screens glowed brightly, selling fear and doubt. The truth bled quietly, seldom spoken out. But today it's on the news again that the Zionist entity has murdered Palestinians and burned their city. Savagery is in their blood, genocide their game. The world is watching live as they enter the Hall of Shame. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late.
not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too America gives the go-ahead, then it sends in bombs. Israel calls it self-defense and murders without qualms. Since when has killing children become a source of pride? Silence must be broken if you want to turn the tide. It's time we made the right choice, our lives may be on the line. It's time we raised our voice, chanting free, free Palestine. The police can do what they want to do, detain one or two. But thousands of millions are coming through, a move they cannot undo. Don't they see nations waking up? Don't they see people rising up? Don't they see that we won't bow? It's too late to stop us now. It's too late to stop us now. It's too late. Can't you see the land is breaking? It's too late. Can't you see the children dying? It's too late. Let's not be judged by history for what we should have done to save humanity. It's too late. Oh, it's too late.
Ocean of Dua.
A'udhu billah min ash-shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. Hello everyone, dear brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Murarisi here with another special edition of this program, The Ocean of Dua. In this special edition and during this sacred and holy month of Ramadan, we'll try to talk about some parts of Iftitah supplication, and we'll be bringing you the commentary on some parts of this supplication. We'll be back again after you listen to some parts of this dua, so stay with us.
Alhamdulillah, الذي لا يهتك حجابه ولا يغلق بابه ولا يرد سائله ولا يخيب آمنه.
Praise be to Allah. No one can disclose anything hidden by him, and no one can shut the doors kept open by him, and no one who makes a request is sent away disappointed by him. In the previous programs, we concluded that the doors of God's mercy are ever open, and having this kind of God, it is impolite to worship our God sluggishly and despondently, or even think that he is indebted to us because of our worship. So we must see who our master is at first, and we must know him, and then we try to acquire more knowledge about him. Because he himself has said that he admits everybody without any discrimination. As Imam Sajjad alayhi salam has said, لا يشغله شأن عن شأن. No action hinders him from engaging in another. So if we reflect, we realize that our prayers and supplications are nothing but commissions of sin. For example, Let us assume that after a long time of separation and being away from our friend, then we meet him, and then we are supposed to have an hour of discussion, sacred discussion. But during our meeting, we turn our back and we're busy with other work, maybe fiddling with everything else and other things. Such a behavior is obviously offensive. If you're supposed to meet a prominent figure and we do the same, it is more offensive and unpleasant, of course, since it proves we have been indifferent in all these times. But our lack of attention to God or presence of heart during prayer is most offensive and shameful. If after God has given us the opportunity to be in His presence and talk to Him, we do not pay attention to Him, we deserve severe punishment, which is worthy even if it kills us. I mean, He is the God. We have been away from Him. We had turned away from Him. And now we have come back, and we do not have the presence of heart. In spite of all these things, God does not reject us. In fact, He always invites us to partake in His banquet. And also, on the other hand, God's forgiveness and compassion should not make us arrogant. Commensurate to our knowledge, we are bound to discharge our duty in the best possible manner. I mean, there are some prayers and supplications which are mere recitation of some words without that spirit of worship, without intention, without the presence of heart which is needed in worship. Those kinds of prayers and supplications are devoid of grace. We must struggle to make our prayers, supplications, and other devotional acts acquire the spirit of worship, which, of course, means at first we should try to understand their meaning, and then we can try to have the presence of heart.
The month of Ramadan is that in which was revealed the Quran, a guidance for the people and clear proofs of guidance and criterion. So whoever cites the new moon of the month, let him fast it, and whoever is ill or on a journey, then an equal number of other days. Allah intends for you ease and does not intend for you hardship, and wants for you to complete the period and to glorify Allah for that to which He has guided you, and perhaps you will be grateful.
And let me tell you one, there is something else which is equally wrong, and that is to delay the performance of acts of worship, especially the obligatory ritual prayers, which is, of course, equally wrong to this that we mentioned. We should not imagine that if the saying of prayer is somehow delayed, we will become more enthusiastic in performing it. In many cases, the delay itself is a kind of satanic insinuation, that waswasa that is under the guise of tiredness, sometimes under the guise of work, and the like. Prayer which is performed after its prescribed time, we must admit, is deficient and spiritless. And of course we should note that no matter how the level of our acts of worship be, they should not be abandoned. Instead, we must strive to perform them better and be more polite and humble in the presence of God. To abandon them is a sin itself and is a sign of ingratitude. The solution is not to abandon a devotional act, but to improve it. Unfortunately, there are some narrow-minded people who think that prayer or supplication which is devoid of understanding is useless. This is not true. Besides the outer expressions of worship, we must beseech God to give us presence of heart and the opportunity to increase our understanding and love of Him. And this is, in fact, another grace and favor of the Almighty Allah, and we should be aware of that. And if we grow that sense of understanding, that sense of knowledge and gnosis, we will see that there will be the result of love and affection as a product of this ma'rifah, inshallah. Thank you, dear listeners, for staying with us in this program as well. We ask the Almighty Allah to bestow on us the power and bravery to face dreadful events in our lives. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio. Palestine Declassified.
Hello, I'm Chris Williamson, and this is Palestine Declassified, where we provide an in-depth analysis of Israel's criminal behavior and the effort it puts into influencing international policymakers and global public opinion. In today's show, we'll be setting out the real reasons behind Israel's renewed interest in Somaliland. In our first report, Najeef Ravachakra provides some historical context to the recent developments in the relationship between Somaliland and Israel.
When people mention Greater Israel, they usually mean the plan to colonize all of what the Zionists call Erez Yisrael. That is, all the land between the rivers Nile and Euphrates, and thus includes all of Palestine, Lebanon, Jordan, and parts of Syria, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, and Egypt. But it is increasingly recognized that the Greater Israel project has aims far beyond West Asia. This has been admitted by Netanyahu, who says he absolutely subscribed to the vision. He has even presented maps of the new Middle East, which include all of Saudi Arabia and Egypt, as well as Sudan. But plans are much further advanced than this suggests. Somaliland is one of the Zionists' targets. It's a country which the Zionist movement wants to turn into a military base from which the Zionists and the UAE carve up Africa into easily manipulated resource plundering zones. Crucially, it is also very close, around 150 nautical miles, to the coast of Yemen, where the Zionists seek to destroy the Ansarullah government. Somaliland is a former British colony, bordering Djibouti, Ethiopia, and Somalia, that declared independence from Somalia in 1991, without receiving international recognition. Under international law, Somaliland is currently deemed an autonomous district of Somalia. In 1960, a time when Somaliland was briefly independent, Israel was one of the 35 countries to recognize its independence. Back in the 1990s, the self-styled president of the so-called Republic of Somaliland wrote to the Zionist regime, asking for help with overcoming the Islamist adversaries of the people of Somaliland. "My government needs the support and assistance of the State of Israel to defend our nascent state from the menace of pro-Islamist dark forces." In February 2010, Israeli Foreign Ministry spokesperson Yigal Palmor revealed that Netanyahu was prepared to recognize Somaliland again, though it did not happen at the time. The plans are now active again. In late 2024, reports emerged that Israel had secretly approached Somaliland with an offer to establish a military base on its territory in exchange for official recognition. Somaliland is reportedly willing to accept the Israeli base, provided that Israel recognizes Somaliland and invests in it. In October this year, the Zionist regime dispatched Miss Israel on a mission to supposedly save Somali children, claiming in manifest propaganda that they were providing aid and protection without requesting anything in return. The neighboring Sudanese government's view is that Somaliland now serves as a UAE military hub. Armored vehicles, weapons, and gear flow through, moving onward to Ethiopia and into Darfur, fueling the RSF and UAE-backed mercenaries. Somaliland is on fire, not despite, but because of the intervention of the Zionists and their UAE proxies.
As usual, I'm joined in the studio by David Miller, who's the UK's foremost scholarly critic of Israel and our resident expert. He's a co-director of the Lobbying Watchdog Spinwatch and a senior research fellow at the Centre for Islam and Global Affairs at Istanbul Zeyim University. Today's guest contributor is a good friend of the show. He's the political commentator, celebrated hip-hop artist, and regular correspondent for Double Down News. His name is Loki. Welcome to the show. David, the Zionist ambition for a greater Israel is much larger than many people think, isn't it?
Well, you saw in the film there, didn't you, the extent of greater Israel in the original Zionist plans, which of course have been denied for many decades, but now everybody acknowledges that they're true, including, of course, Netanyahu. And then you saw the Netanyahu at the UN with his diagrams of the new Middle East, which of course extends way beyond the greater Israel. But of course we see in Somaliland and in Sudan and indeed in Ethiopia the extent of the attempts by the Zionists to get into Africa and to use Africa as a mechanism for military projection and also of course for resource extraction. So yeah, of course they are trying to move way beyond the question of a greater Israel in West Asia into Africa, into East Asia and even into Latin America as well.
Well, Loki, okay, I mean, how far do you think the ambition for a greater Israel extends then?
I think it depends on the definition that you apply. Because if you're talking about infrastructurally speaking, then in this country, for example, the police hacks phones with the use of an Israeli intelligence company which has access to that information. You have Oracle managing the data for key government institutions, and that organization clearly has a commitment to Israel, works closely with the Israeli military, and has a leader who is the largest donor to the Israeli military in the history of the charity that manages those donations. So really it spreads across the world in different ways, and I would say it exists within the infrastructural arrangements of society, meaning access to data, access to information. If you've just had the former head of Israel's external intelligence agency saying they have exported manipulated equipment into all sorts of countries, then you're really talking about something quite different from what is sometimes depicted as a colonial settler movement specifically focused on Palestine. You are now talking about something that has established itself as a regional hegemon militarily, certainly, but now also this interesting role around the world of trying to dictate events, control information, and bully governments.
Are we looking to a worldwide hegemon then? I mean, we've talked about a regional one, but I mean, from what you're saying, it seems to be obviously considerably
wider. Well, what certainly is true is that the United States has around 1,000 military bases around the world. What we don't know is the extent to which the Israeli military either has access to those bases or a presence on those bases. It's certainly come alongside the US empire around the world, but we just don't know the extent of Israel's role in these places.
Sure. Well, David, I mean, how long has the Zionists' involvement in Somaliland been going on for?
Well, we saw in the film there, I mean, they were involved way back when Somaliland declared itself independent. 35 countries in the world recognised it back in 1960, and the Zionists were one of those. And then more recently, they've opened these new negotiations to create a base there alongside their vassal state, the UAE, so that they can use the Somaliland's territory as a means for power protection in the region of the Horn of Africa, including the Sudan and Ethiopia and other countries in the area. So it's they've been involved for a long time, but they've now got focused and renewed efforts to extend their ability to project power into Africa. But of course, let's remember that the other reason why they want to be on the Red Sea and the Horn of Africa coast is because it's just across the water from Yemen and from Ansarallah. 140 miles is the closest distance from Somaliland to the port of Aden, and of course that's part of the agenda as well.
Yeah, so it's kind of a military strategic.
It's a military strategic in terms of West Asia and Yemen, but it's military strategic in a different way in terms of power projection into Africa, into Sudan, and indeed further afield across to West Africa.
Sure. Well, Loki, I mean, Somaliland, I mean, it's not recognised as a country, is it, by the international community? So, I mean, why do you think Israel's moving to recognise, is it? I mean, David was just alluding to the situation in terms of its proximity to Yemen. I mean, is it to do with Ansarallah and their ability to, you know, to strike back against Ansarallah, or what?
Well, if you look at it historically, the UAE from 2017 has controlled the port there. It also has a military base there, which has been accused of aiding in different ways forces within Sudan and being a basis of operations. The UAE has a network of airfields and bases across the region. And you also have to remember that the port of the Somaliland is controlled by DP World. Now, DP World is headed by a UAE government official who, emails have just been released, was discussing the use of smart shoes with Jeffrey Epstein, the now deceased, it appears, Israeli asset. So essentially Israel wants to establish a military presence in Somaliland. It may have already done that through the UAE. That's probably the case. The Abraham Accords was about regional integration economically and militarily. It was about getting money from the Gulf to flow into the Zionist entity, but also the militaries in the region to become openly integrated and working together. And that was, you know, one of the key stipulations of the Abraham Accords is that the countries which sign on to it have to invest. I mean, in the cases of some of the Gulf countries, it looks like about $10 billion in the Israeli economy over many, many years. Now, that's pretty incredible. What would be the kind of stipulations placed on a tiny mini state like Somaliland? So really, the Abraham Accords has been a subterfuge through which this empire that we're talking about has been expanded and extended, and Somaliland would be no different.
Right, okay. Well, so, I mean, David, I mean, it seems, doesn't it? It certainly looks as if that, you know, the Zionist entity and the UAE I mean, they're using Somaliland as a sort of a gateway into Africa.
Look, it's a gateway into Africa. As I've said, it's about power projection, military power projection, both ways, back to West Asia and Yemen, into the rest of Africa. But it's also about resource extraction. So as we saw in the show the other week about Sudan, the UAE has been involved in smuggling gold out of the Sudan. And, of course, that's part of that's going through Ethiopia, through Somaliland, and then up to the UAE. So